නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Kajjaniya Sutta, literally translated as being devout, and the sutta begins with the Buddha's statement related to the past lives. So there are various methods that one can recollect past lives, especially in the persons who are well developed in samatha practice. So they can recall past lives, and depends on their skill, probably several past lives or many past lives, many eons of past lives. So likewise, that skill vary from person to person. But anyway, Buddha mentioned here that irrespective of how many past lives that one can recollect, one can recall back, still what they are reflecting is nothing but the five aggregates, five clinging aggregates. After mentioning that, he went on to explain about why each and every aggregate has given that name, why Rupa, the matter, has given the name Rupa, why Vedana has given the name Vedana, why perceptions has given the name Sanya, why Sankhara, the formations, are given that name Sankhara, and then why Vijnana has given the name Vijnana, the consciousness. So after explaining that, Buddha went on explaining that how these different kinds of aggregates are constantly consuming us, constantly devouring us. So that statement is a very strong statement, and probably we might not understand that immediately. So now we are going one by one, each aggregate, discussing how they are affecting us, how they are devouring us, consuming us, and we are here trying to connect this sutta with our practice. Now, so far we have discussed the Rupa, Vedana, and last time we discussed Sanya. So today I thought of discussing a little bit on the Sankhara formations. Now, the statement given by the Buddha here, why it is mentioned volitional formations. They construct the conditioned. Sankatang abhisankharanti iti sankharati ucchati. So the already constructed phenomena, they are further constructing, further fabricating, further preparing. Now you know Buddha mentioned there are three characteristics of each and every constructed phenomena, sankata phenomena. Tinimani bhikkhave sankatani sankata lakkhanani. Monks, there are three characteristics of all the conditioned phenomena. What are they? Uppado paññāyati, vayo paññāyati, titassa añatattam paññāyati. There is a beginning, there is an end, and in between there is a constant change. So these are the three characteristics that one can recognize in each and every conditioned phenomena. Now, on top of this conditioned phenomena, now these fabrications, sankhara, do various kinds of formations, various kinds of further fabrications, further constructions. Now, Buddha explains, say for example, Rupa. Whenever you see something, so immediately what we capture is nothing but the light, the shape, and the color, the very primitive aspects of that object, the visible object. But we don't stop there, rather we do various constructions on top of that. So we have our own likes and dislikes, and we are adding those likes and dislikes into the picture so that what we have seen would become more beautiful. Assume that I have seen a beautiful image, so now I like it. So that desire, now I am adding on top of what I have seen. So after that, probably I want to possess it, I want to have it. Now I am approaching it, I'm trying to see it more closely, try to investigate it, adding more and more my own preconceived ideas into the picture. So likewise, I do various constructions based on what I have seen. Now this comes under the fabrications. Now in order to do that, I am making use of various thoughts. So I am thinking about it, adding another thought about it. Maybe with respect to the past, I am adding various thoughts. Maybe with respect to future, I am adding so many other thoughts. So many different generations of thoughts, now I am adding to the picture. Now same situation happens with sounds as well. Whenever there is a sound, so if I like it, then probably I can even recall who is singing it, who is making that sound, what are the notes that he is using, so what are the instruments being used, so what are the other words or lyrics available in the song. So many other things now I can add. I can even close my eyes and entertain the song, being delighted by that. So likewise, I now in an entirely different world than previously what I was, where I was. Previously, I just heard a sound. But now it is no more a sound. It has become a beautiful song. So this beautification, these additions are all mind-made. And we add those based on our upbringing, based on our cultural conditioning, social conditioning, our religious conditioning, with so many other various kinds of conditioning that we already have. Now I am adding so much of information onto the picture. Same is true for various kinds of smells, various tastes, various tactile sensations, and beautifully even to the thoughts. Now there is a thought arise in the mind, and I consider that thought belongs to me, and I have to act upon it. Now I am adding another thought onto it. I am adding another thought. I am adding another thought. So likewise, I am weaving a net of thoughts, and ultimately I am ended up with fully confused mental proliferation. Now I am very much like a victim of that process. Now the mind itself is thinking based on its own conditioning process. Now I can't even stop it. Now I am in a kind of a overwhelmed situation because of the overthinking, mental proliferation. Now this whole process happens because we are in a way fond of mental proliferation, this construction. Actually, Buddha mentioned that papancha bhirata paja nippa pancha papa tathagata. So this whole clan of people are obsessed with thinking, obsessed with constructions, obsessed with mental proliferation. Tathagatas are free from mental proliferation. Now you can see internally how much suffering that we are creating by adding so much of our own likes and dislikes, cultural upbringing, religious conditioning onto the picture. So we don't know how to stop ourselves. Now Buddha mentioned here, now even when we consider say feeling, now whenever we are going to assume that a painful feeling, so we are adding our own picture onto it. It could be a physical feeling, physical pain, but we don't stop there. Now we add our own likes and dislikes onto it. I want to get rid of it. Why it happened to me? Poor me. It is always me that going through all these issues. Others are doing well. I am the suffering person every time. So likewise, I have my own kind of worries. Now I am adding all that into the picture. Now on top of physical pain, now I have a lot of mental pain as well. Now this is how we add so much constructions onto pains. Now, similarly, if we are experiencing some happy experience or pleasurable experience, pleasurable feeling, there also I am adding so much my own stuff, thinking that this belongs to me, I want to have it, I want to possess it, I want to have it in tomorrow, I want to discuss, I want to marry, I want to own. So likewise, all the different kinds of pleasurable feelings, now I am constructing, I am fabricating, and ultimately I am even further developing my own desires. As you know, whenever we are desiring pleasurable feelings, so that further aggravate our latent tendency called raganusaya. So raganusaya is now growing because I am adding so much of my own stuff onto the pleasurable feeling. Pleasurable feeling may be a physical pleasurable feeling, but now I have so much of my own additions to it. Now I am thinking about it, proliferating about it, wishing about it, hoping about it, and ultimately I am ended up with complete mental proliferation, even with respect to various kinds of pleasurable feelings. Now likewise, even the equanimous feelings I can construct. Now suppose you are doing anapanasati meditation, so most probably the feeling is equanimous, it is not that pleasurable, it is not that painful. So what we are experiencing may be a fairly equanimous feeling, but to that equanimous feeling I can add so much my own constructs, thinking this say breathing pattern may not be suitable, breathing pattern may not give enough oxygen. So likewise I can have my own judgments. Now I may even add various constructs into this equanimous feeling. So there are so many other times that we are adding so much my own stuff onto the equanimous feeling, because sometimes equanimous feelings appear quite boring, so I can't bear it, I can't just be with it. So I am always expecting some pleasurable feelings in order to get rid of equanimous feeling, the boredom which is producing through the equanimous feelings. So that is where we can't just stop, we can't just be. So we always want to do. So this doing syndrome is something that we are always suffering, and as a result of that I want to do something. I want to react. I want to act. So likewise these constructions are constantly going on in our mind. Now if we perceive some sort of a sign, suppose there is a mental image appear in our mind. So onto this mental image, now I can't recognize it as a mental image. Rather, I add my own values. Say now I am thinking, okay, this is my son. Okay, my son is a good son. Or my son has just passed the exam. Or my son has to go through the exam. Or he has failed the exam. Or now he has to enter the university. So much of other various conditioning now going on, but initially what I have experienced is just a mental image. But I can't keep mental image as a mental image, rather I add so much of other constructs onto mental image. So even at the perception level, now I have various perceptions. Now I have a kind of a perception related to my son. Suppose that you had a perception about your son, thinking, okay, he's a good son, but now assume that he failed the exam. Okay, why it happened to him? Now you are thinking, and now your perception related to your son might change. So you have a different perception right now related to your son. Even assume that you are thinking about another person. So previously you might had a one type of say perception, but due to some reasons now you have a change in that perception, now you have a different perception related to that person. Now likewise the perceptions are also changing. We do a lot of constructions, changes, additions, subtractions onto the perceptions, ultimately, we think that we are the perceptions, this is my perception, this is what I think. So likewise, we recognize, we identify ourselves with respect to perceptions. We are trapped in the perceptions. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned, the sankharas are working on sankharas themselves. Now that is where our most tricky part. Because whenever we encounter, assume that just one kind of a volition, say you want to see your friend, just a thought came to your mind, just a one volition, one intention. Now that intention, now you are adding, now you are further constructing, now you want to call, now you want to check whether he is at home, now you want to check whether he is doing well, now you are thinking about him. Now initially what you experience is some sign of a desirable thought related to your friend. It could be a friendly thought. But on top of that friendly thought, loving kindness thought, now you are so much of acting. Your hands are going on, your legs are going on, you are now walking, you are taking the key, you are switching, starting the vehicle, you are now going there, calling there. So many things are going on. So same thing is true for various other mental states. Say you have a lustful thought. So we don't just keep the lustful thought as lustful thought. We add so many other lustful thoughts into the picture. Now we become so much of lustful. And one interesting phenomena that Buddha mentioned is that whenever our minds are inclined towards some kind of thought pattern, now mind is very much like thinking about according to that mental construct, according to that kind of thinking by its own. Say for example, previously your mind is fairly clean, fairly free. It was not thinking much about anything. Now suppose all of a sudden you got a thought about, say, food. Now you feel a little hungry and you had a thought about the food. And now you start thinking. Now you start even calling. You want to check food stores. Now you want to go there. Now you want to buy something. So now food related thoughts are on and on, coming on and on. Food related thoughts. Because now the mind is fairly inclined towards the thoughts related to food. So this phenomena is true for every different kinds of thought patterns or generations of thoughts. So whenever our mind is inclined towards a particular pattern of thinking, so it is fairly conditioned in that, and again it is now thinking by itself. So it is not that someone else is thinking or someone else is influencing. Rather, our own mind get conditioned in a particular way of thinking, and ultimately it is constantly thinking. It is now habituated in thinking in that particular manner. Now you become a desirous person, you become an angry person, lustful person, because your mind is so much conditioned in that way of thinking. Now suppose you start to think about a lustful thought. Now, only at the beginning you need to participate. Only at the beginning you need to actively think this and think that and recall this, recall that. And once the mind catches momentum, ultimately you don't need to participate or you don't need to put your own strength. Rather, mind itself thinks so much of lustful thoughts. Now, this is an interesting kind of mental phenomena, where our minds are operating based on that kind of a preconditioning, that kind of inclinations. So when the mind is inclined towards lust, it is constantly thinking about lust. When the mind is inclined towards anger, constantly thinking about angry thoughts. It's adding from the past, from the future, from the present, it's adding so much of angry thoughts. If you are now promoting sort of jealousy in the mind, now it is more into the jealousy thoughts. If your mind is more inclined towards, say, loving kindness, now you want to help someone, you want to write an email, you want to wish him, you want to bless him, now your mind is fairly conditioned towards the loving kindness thoughts. Now all these are conditioning process happening because of the thinking, because we can't stop the mind. We can't just keep the mind empty. We can't just keep the mind free from thinking. Now we start thinking and ultimately we do a lot of constructions, fabrications, and our mind is in the full swing of thinking. Now this is how the constructions, sankhara, are acting upon constructions. Sankhara itself is acting upon the sankhara. It becomes very complicated then. Because we can't now look at where we have started even. Now things are going on and on, mind is obsessively thinking, and we can't recognize where we started. Where the root, where the source, we can't recognize it is because everywhere now various different kinds of thinking is going on. And further Buddha mentioned even the consciousness aggregate, we do lot of constructions onto it. Suppose your mind is fairly free, it is not established anywhere, it is not clinging to anywhere. But now all of a sudden, suppose there is someone coming to your visible range, and assume that he is someone that you really like. Now your mind get established on that picture, on that visible object. Previously mind was not established, mind was fairly kind of surveillance going on, kind of an overview happens. But right now your mind has selected a particular object. Among thousands of other objects, now you have selected a particular object. Onto that object, now your mind is established. Your consciousness is established. Now, once your mind has selected that object, your consciousness established, and now it is growing. Now you may have the eye consciousness, you may have the mind consciousness. Now, different kinds of a series of consciousness are now going to be developed, now going to be arisen. So likewise, these constructions happen even at the consciousness level. So whenever we select a particular object, that means the consciousness aggregate coming to the effect. And we don't now stop there. We add so many other consciousness onto it. We are adding so much of mind consciousness onto the eye consciousness. Probably we want to talk now, and we are adding body consciousness. So likewise, now consciousness is growing, developing, multiplying happens. So likewise, the consciousness aggregate also coming to the picture. So likewise, so all these different kinds of constructions, fabrications, happen at the level of consciousness aggregate. Now if we consider what really has happened to our mind, suppose you were a fairly good meditator and you were able to maintain a very quiet mind, a mind free from inner chatter, mind free from any grasping. At least for some time you were able to maintain that kind of a unbounded kind of mind. A mind free from any grasping, free from any stress, from any tension. So your mind is fairly healthy at that time. But now what has happened? Your mind is again into the full swing of thinking. On and on, going on and on, thinking. Now, these constructions are sort of making the mind fairly occupied, and now you have lost the freedom. Now mind has its own way of thinking, own way of conditioning, different inclinations, and now it is thinking. Now, this thinking process has now fully consumed the mind. So previously you had a very healthy, calm, quiet type of a mind, but it is not available right now, no more. It is now fully consumed by thinking. Now thinking has fully occupied the mind. Now this is how thinking, constructions, fabrications are constantly devouring us, constantly consuming us, constantly disturbing us, constantly catching our attention, constantly occupying our mind. Otherwise, actually, our minds are fairly pure, fairly stable, fairly quiet, fairly still. But there is no stillness at all right now, but it is jumping from this to that, from past to future, and it become kind of a burden. It become fairly gross, fairly conditioned, and grasping this to that, and ultimately we are in a kind of a mess, fully consumed by thinking. Now, when Buddha going on explaining like this, now he even expand this understanding to other 11 directions. So he mentioned either with respect to the past, or with respect to the future, or with respect to the present, with respect to some gross fabrications or refined fabrications, or different kinds of fabrications happen with respect to very far objects or very near objects, some superior objects, inferior objects. So likewise, a full range of fabrications he now tried to explain, so that we may understand that all these fabrications are fabrications. It is not just the present fabrications, and whatever fabrications with respect to the past, whatever fabrications with respect to the future, whatever fabrications that you consider as something superior, whatever the fabrications that you consider as inferior, as the, say, the far, near, gross, subtle, so different kinds of categorizations that we introduce, all are these different kinds of fabrications, and there Buddha mentioned none of them are permanent. Now he actually questioned the monks. He questioned the monks, are monks these fabrications permanent or impermanent? Now then the monks answer him, telling that these fabrications are impermanent. Now that is not merely an answer given out of faith. It is something has to happen, has to come from their own experience. So they have to observe their minds for a long time. And with the observation, they may understood, okay, these fabrications are impermanent. So whenever you do a fabrication, and once you assume that you are able to establish mindfulness right now, and you stop that fabrication, as a result of that, the previously constructed fabrication may slowly fade away. Now, whenever we stop our participation, whenever we stop our own support, then the fabrications themselves don't have enough energy to sustain. So they may end up very quickly. So that is what happens in our mind when we start to step back and watch. When you have a fair amount of mindfulness, whenever you have a fair amount of clear comprehension, now you can step back and watch what is really going on in the mind. So that observation helps to calm down the mind, because we are no more supporting that fabrication process. We are not doing the fabrications. We are not participating. We are not encouraging. Rather, we step back and merely watch. Now we are not adding our own stuff into the picture. Rather, we simply observe, mindfully observe. That's all. We are not strengthening the ongoing process. So whenever we stop strengthening that process, so that process itself can't last for a long time. Because it is always expecting some kind of a participation from our side. Expecting some energy coming from our side. So whenever we stop participating, whenever we stop providing that energy, so the fabrication itself is a very weak process. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned that these fabrications are like a banana trunk. Now you know, when we consider a banana trunk, now it doesn't have a core, it doesn't have hardwood. It is just, if you assume that you are peeling a banana trunk, and many peeling happens, sheets coming out, but ultimately you won't find any core. You won't find out any hardwood. So that is the nature of the banana trunk. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, now whenever the mind is going through some kind of thinking, it appear like very strong. Suppose that you are burning with lust. Now it appear like very strong. You are burning. Mind is constantly thinking. You become fully consumed by lust, consumed by sankhara. You are burning with sankhara, lustful sankhara. But now suppose that you, at a given moment, you stop that fabrication. You are able to establish mindfulness, like you built a dam. There are various kinds of lustful thoughts flowing, a flooding of thoughts happen, but at a given moment you are able to establish mindfulness, like you have quickly built a dam. Now all the thoughts come into a kind of a standstill. When that has happened, probably you can apply some vipassana technique, you can further establish mindfulness. Ultimately, those lustful thoughts start to fade away. Ultimately, no lustful thoughts at all. Your mind again become quite calm. Now, at that point you can understand, okay, these lustful thoughts are not permanent. So far I was promoting them, I was constructing them, I was supporting them. That is why ultimately they start to consume me, devour me. But now when I stop that, probably it starts to fade away and ultimately mind become quiet. So therefore Buddha mentioned, I mean, when you consider a banana trunk, there is no core. There is no any heartwood. Similarly, whenever you are able to establish mindfulness and apply some introspection and closely examine, ultimately all the different kinds of thoughts start to fade away, there is no core, there is no any essence. Previously you were thinking that you are really a lustful character, you are really an angry character, so likewise you have given so much of value to it, so much of solidified thought about it, you thought that you can never change. But now you may understood, everything has vanished, everything has evaporated, all the thoughts have gone. What is remaining is just pure awareness, no thoughts at all. So to that pure awareness, you can't call as a lustful person, you can't call as an angry person. It is just a pure awareness. So likewise, so there is no any inner core. So when consider the sankhara aggregate, so that is where Buddha mentioned, it is not permanent and it is constantly arising and passing away. If you observe various thoughts, you may understand they are quickly coming and going. And if you can become dispassionate towards them, then they slowly fade away. And there may be absence of thoughts, there may be complete calmness, complete stillness, complete quietude. So likewise, now you are experiencing a different kinds of situation. Now you are experiencing what we call sabba sankhara samatha, calming down of all the formations. Previously you were fully into formations, fully geared, making so much of formations. But now you are attuned to calming down mental proliferations, calming down various fabrications, calming down constructions. Instead of doing, now you are trying just be. Previously you are so much of addicted in doing so much of things. But now you are trying to just be, just calm down, just be quiet, keep the mind silent. Now this is a kind of a radical change happens in one's life. Because it's very difficult for us to stop doing. We are always geared in doing something. We are always sort of conditioned to do something, motivated to do something. And people are always asking, why don't you do something? Why don't you do something? So that is how people are asking. Because they can't just wait. They want us also to do something, and they are asking, why don't you do something? But a yogi who has gone fairly far, he may have to know how not to do, how to stop, how to stand still, how to be quiet, how to keep the mind free from thinking. Now these are very interesting areas that one can explore, because through vipassana one can reach this state. Suppose that you are practicing Vedana Anupassana and you are able to observe various kinds of feelings, and they start coming and going, and you understood their impermanent nature. And while you are doing that, your mind has become fairly quiet. Now probably even you may look at the mind, and different thoughts slowly come and go, and now there could be even absence of thoughts. So when such absence of thoughts happen, if you are not putting attention back to the feelings, back to the breath, anything, rather you just keep the mind very quiet, free from any thinking, free from any kind of fabrications, now your mind becomes completely empty, complete calmness, complete stillness. So this can happen. So when it happens, so if we are able to recognize it, if we are able to appreciate it, if you are able to understand, okay, this is the nature of the mind. Here I have came back home. Now I am at home. I just have to be. I just have to enjoy. I just have to experience this inner silence. So if I am able to look at it in that angle, then we are more and more promoting non-constructions, non-fabrications. We do some sort of a deconstructions. Instead of constructing, now I am deconstructing. Whenever mind start to construct something, now I am putting kind of a deconstruction process. I am dismantling. Now that is where Buddha very beautifully mentioned in this Kajjaniya Sutta. This is called a bhikkhu, a noble disciple, who dismantles and does not build up. Instead of constructing, instead of building up, he dismantles. Now you can look at your own mind, how we typically build up various thoughts. Initially there may be several thoughts. Now we are adding few more thoughts. Now we are adding few more thoughts. Now we are adding so many thoughts. Ultimately ultimately so much of thinking, you are building up a huge thinking process. Instead of doing that, you do dismantling. So different thoughts are there. Now you are step back and watching without promoting any kind of thinking, without getting carried away by the content of the thinking. As a result of that, the thoughts become less and less. The frequency of thoughts become less and less. And now you are very much like dismantling. Now thoughts may come one after the other. Now even less thoughts. Now there may be gaps between thoughts. And now you may even experience absence of thoughts. Now the fully thoughts are fully dismantled. No thoughts at all. Who abandons and does not cling. Typically we cling to various thoughts. We consider these thoughts are important. We consider these thoughts belong to me. I have to act upon them. So I am doing so much of clinging onto these thoughts. Whenever a thought happens, it's a very important thought. But now, it is merely another thought. I am not adding any value to it. I am not putting any kind of an importance into that thought. It is just a merely a thought. Now, Buddha mentioned, he is not clinging into any of these thoughts. He simply abandoned those thoughts. Pajahati na upadhyati. He simply abandons. He does not cling. And then he mentioned, who scatters and does not amass. He simply scatter everything. Various thoughts are happening and he just scatter them out. Not giving any importance to them. If you select a particular thought, if you go into the content of thought, if you give a value to that, then only you are getting trapped. Rather than that, you simply consider every thought as just a thought, not giving any value, you just scatter them out. As a result of that, there is no amassing happens, there is no collection happen. Thoughts are not getting accumulated. Rather, whenever a thought happens, you are just having a kind of a dispassionate attitude, you are ready to scatter them out. So once all the thoughts are scattered, now there is no strength coming from your side for the thoughts to sustain. So ultimately those thoughts start to fade away. Again mind become kind of silent, free from thoughts. And further Buddha mentioned, who extinguishes and does not kindle. Now you know, whenever a lustful thought happens, so we are promoting it, we are adding to it, we are thinking further. Ultimately, one becomes burned with lust. Now this is how we are burning, we start to burn. Whenever an angry thought happens, so I am adding another angry thought, I am adding another angry thought, I am thinking about the past and getting so many other angry thoughts, thinking about the future and adding some more angry thoughts. Ultimately, I become fully consumed by anger, fully burned by anger. So this is how we are burning with various defilements. But instead of doing that, Buddha mentioned, he extinguishes. He knows this is an angry thought. It has a potential to get burned. Now rather than allowing the mind to get burned by anger, now I am slowly extinguishing it. I allow this angry thought to fade away. It is ultimately I am the one going to be consumed. I am the one going to be burnt by anger. So why I allow my mind to get burned by anger? He may be wrong. She may be wrong. But it is my mind ultimately going to get burnt. It is my mind ultimately going to get consumed. He may not even know that. He might have blamed me, hint me, has gone, and he may simply mind his own business, but I am here burning with anger. So the loss is doubled in my side. Probably I may be correct, but I am the one burning with anger and consuming myself by anger. Now, if we are able to look at in that angle, now why should I allow my mind to get burned by anger? So there I have to recognize anger as anger, seeing its repercussions, consequences, not allowing the mind to get burned, rather I slowly allow anger to fade away, allow anger to extinguish. Again mind is calm, again mind is quiet, no burning. Now, this way, Buddha mentioned in this, what we discuss in this Kajaniya Sutta, so whenever mind is trying to amass, trying to construct, trying to build up, trying to cling, trying to burn, we have to do the opposite. We have to scatter, we have to extinguish, we have to abandon, we have to calm down and keep the mind quiet. So that is where Buddha mentioned he got a mind which is not doing any constructions, not delighted in constructions, not interested in proliferation. So Buddha mentioned Nippapancha Tathagata. So Tathagata's minds, Buddha's minds are free from proliferation, free from various constructions. So he, as his very first udana, explanation, so he mentioned, visankhara gatan chittam, tanhanam khayamajjaga. So his mind become visankhara gata. Instead of constructions, his mind simply dismantles, deconstructs, not interested in constructions. His mind become quiet. His mind becomes still, silent. So this is how Buddha explained that how one has to avoid constructions, stop constructions, stop fabrications, so that one may be able to experience calmness, free from inner chatter, free from constructions, and can enjoy inner silence. So we'll see in the future how he is explaining with respect to the consciousness aggregate. Today I tried to explain more into the fabrications, the sankhara aggregate. And with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
When we are doing our, you know, mindfulness practice, and for the most part, I mean, I think most of us are noticing kind of the arising, right, of the various phenomenon, etc. But what is it that we, is there something that we need to do to better notice the passing away of the various phenomenons?
Yeah, actually, sometimes we encourage purposely, okay, now you try to look at the passing away side. But most probably, it becomes quite natural that yogis may start to notice the rising side, and slowly mind get inclined towards watching the destruction side, the passing away side. So if it happens naturally, that is well and good. But on the other hand, if you are constantly seeing the arising side and you never notice the passing away, so that is where you need a little bit of encourage the mind to look at the passing away side. And actually, Buddha, in this very Kajaniya Sutta, he used the kind of encouragement, telling that netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. Now whenever, suppose there are some thoughts arising, now you can encourage yourself that none of them are belong to you. They are not myself. They are not my soul. Or they are not belong to me. They are not me. Netammama neso hamasmi na meso attati. Now you, it's a kind of an encouragement. It's a kind of a recollection, kind of reminding yourself that these thoughts does not belong to me. They are not myself. So that kind of a quick recollection helps the mind to give up, helps the mind to have some sort of insight. So that helps these arisen thoughts to quickly fade away. Because your mind is now fairly geared or fairly inclined towards sort of disclaiming these thoughts. Rather than considering they belongs to you, now you are disclaiming them. This does not belong to me. Kind of a disengagement happens. So when this disengagement happens, this disclaiming happens, now the thoughts start to fade away. Now, whenever this fading away part sort of catching the momentum, now slowly you may notice the fading away part and not much into the arising part. Instead of arising, now you may watch the passing away. So likewise, we can use some skillful mean just to promote the fading away part if it is not that evident. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Jane. Bhante, you said, you spoke about all these whole processes that you are talking about, obviously we are experiencing it during meditation, is that right?
Not only, actually now, whenever you are observing the mind, so it is meditation. It is not that formal time, it is not that only at the formal time on the cushion that you are supposed to do this. Rather, whenever, assume that you are dealing with someone and all of a sudden you get angry. So now you need to step back and watch. Now you need to practice. So at that very moment, once you are able to establish mindfulness, rather than promoting that anger, so there the thoughts start to dismantle. Thoughts start to become weaker. Now the deconstruction process starts.
Then you went on to say the mind, the consciousness is the mind consciousness is added to the eye consciousness and the mind consciousness added to the body consciousness.
Yeah.
Can you just expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, actually so much of consciousness that we do, we add our mind consciousness. Because the eye is just an instrument, it participates maybe at the beginning, maybe continuing its participation, it's true. But the data it is capturing is very the basic. It is simply capturing the shape and the color. That is the purpose of the eye consciousness. But through the mind consciousness that we add so many other things. Who he is, who she is. Whether she is good, whether she is bad, I want to talk to him, I want to love him, I want to go after him, I want to chase him. Now, all this happens in the mind. So this happens through the mind consciousness. Now, so that is the mind's participation is so prominent, rather than the what you call this eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness and the body consciousness. So they are merely the instruments, apparatus, through which that we get the most primary data. And on top of those primary data, we do a lot of additions, constructions at the mind level. So that is where the mind consciousness comes to the picture.
Right. So when you say the mind consciousness is added to the body consciousness, that is one of those six sense bases that we have just experience, and the mind consciousness is, it starts the story. The constructions, right?
Because
we are thinking now, we are identifying and adding all the things that have been stored in the mind, right?
Exactly, yeah. So because now you know none of these five other types of consciousness, they can't store anything. They can't do any kind of fabrication. They merely get the raw data. Now even that is explained in
right.
the Abhidhamma. Now you know the Javana consciousness. Now all these are mind consciousness, different kinds of mind consciousness. That is where the momentum happens. That is where we react. Other fabrications, other constructions, our own likes and dislikes, how they all belong to the mind consciousness.
Yes, yes. So we have been these, whatever the thoughts, anger thought or the greed thought or whatever it is,
yeah.
when it is coming, then in order to stop it, we have to apply mindfulness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Yeah, apply now. That is what Buddha mentioned. Yani sotani lokasmin satite sang nivaranam. Sotanang sangvaram brumi panyayete pithiyare. Now, someone coming and asking, called Ajitamanavaka. So he come and ask from the Buddha. Now, our mind gets so much, conditioned with so much of thinking. Influenced by various floods of defilements. So what would be the restrainment? And ultimately, how one may completely evaporate all these defilements? Now Buddha answer, Yani sotani lokasmin satite sang nivaranam sotanang sangvaram brumi. Now I say, this mindfulness is the one who restrained the mind. Now assume that there's a kind of flooding going on, a huge flooding going on, and you are able to immediately construct a dam. Now no more flooding, no more flowing happens. But still water remains. Water now get accumulated. Now that water has to be evaporated, has to fully consumed, fully removed. Now that removal part is done by the wisdom. Sotanang sangvaram bhumi panya yethe pithiyare. Now panya, the wisdom, is the one ultimately fully evaporate all the defilements. Mindfulness helps to have kind of a dam, have kind of a restrainment, and now insight coming to the picture, and it fully evaporates, it completely fades away, and remove all the defilements. It's a kind of a collective effort of both these factors, mindfulness and the wisdom. We can say so, but I mean, even say Buddha adds Samma Vimutti, Samma Panya in the long run. Now, when one has some experience about the fully liberated mind, it's not the full liberation in the sense it's not an arahant, but at least a temporary liberation, if one has experience, so that itself become a kind of a path factor. And then you have kind of a wisdom, how to achieve it, so that itself become a path factor. So that is why, I mean, in certain suttas, Buddha talks about 10 path factors. So it is fully developed only by the arahants, but the sekhas, trainees, they can get some support from these other two path factors as well. The what you call the Samma Vimutti and Samma Panya. So jnana is there, Samma Panya is there, because he has now experienced the freedom of mind, at least for a short moment, at least for a short period. So that wisdom he can use.
So in this instance, you have to use wisdom as well, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Develop wisdom that you have developed over the process.
Mm-hmm.
Over the period of time.
Yeah. Now say, actually, that is something that Buddha asked us to develop without a delay. Now if you can remember during the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha makes a very interesting statement. Panyadittano. So Panyadittano means you have to have the support of wisdom. And there he mentioned how we need to operate on it. He mentioned Panyang Nappamajjaya. You should not neglect the development of the wisdom. So you have to be heedful about developing wisdom. So assume that you are practicing Dhatu Manasikara. So that is where you are fully developing wisdom. You are trying to investigate various bodily phenomena, various matter, and you are now trying to understand their true nature. You are trying to realize their true nature. Now this is the wisdom. And once you develop it to a fair extent, now mind get understand, okay, they are impermanent nature, they are unsatisfactory nature, they are non-self nature. Now this is also wisdom. And once that is developed further, okay, now mind get freed. Because fair amount of wisdom is available. So once fair amount of wisdom is available, it is definite result is the abandonment, is the letting go. So that is also wisdom. So likewise, so all are different kinds of insights, and now you can recall them, you can make use of them, you can get their strength, you can remember how you develop that, what are the kinds of insights that you encounter. So this is how we are very much like tapping the wisdom, making use of the wisdom, so that mind may not get on to any kind of an entanglement, get on to any kind of clinging. Rather, mind, you are able to maintain the mind free from clinging, free from any association. If it tries to associate, okay, mindfulness will tell you, and wisdom you may recall and apply, so that again mind get free.
And then we experience brief temporary moments of vimukti, actually,
after
that, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
It's temporary. We feel that sense of a kind of relief in the whole five aggregates.
Is correct. That correct. Correct. Yes, correct. So that is where actually we can refer Kajaniya Sutta. So rather than clinging, now one is interested of abandoning. Rather than amassing, rather than collecting, he is interested of scattering. Further, Buddha mentioned, rather than, kindling, so he is interested of extinguishing. So you can see how Buddha has termed it very beautifully, that how the whole vipassana process is happening. So he promotes that. He actually makes ourselves fairly inclined towards that direction. Instead of building up, you got to dismantle. Instead of clinging, you got to abandon. Instead of amassing, you got to scatter. Instead of burning, kindling, now you got to extinguish.
Thank you, Babaji. I got it,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
very
okay.
Much.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to invite Darshika for the next question.
Bhante, I have a question. It is, I want to know whether Tadanga Nibbuddha state, which is the temporary liberation, which is a state due to emptiness or Anitasana Vinyana and Upeksha, and the neutral state of Vedana and Vasana is the same, or there is a subtle difference? Can you explain, Bhante, please?
Yeah, so I think the equanimity that we talk in the Vedana and Vasana is another level of Vedana, another type of feeling. So we can't fully consider it as the complete freedom of the mind, because mind may still associate a form of feeling, a type of feeling. But when we consider, assume that you are constantly observing its impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and unself nature, even the different kinds of feelings, including equanimous feelings, there you are building up fair amount of wisdom, And there could be a possibility, now mind even abandoned the observation of different kinds of feelings, and now you don't know what is the kind of feeling available. It is just a feeling. You don't know whether it is pleasurable, painful, or equanimous. It's a kind of a feeling is there. It is quite transient, arising and passing away. And ultimately, mind lets go of even that. So then mind becomes, we can say, kind of tadanga nibbuti, where a temporary freedom, temporary liberation is experienced. So actually, Buddha mentioned, and it is more closer to the equanimity. That is why the upekkha bojjhanga is coming to the picture. But it is not merely equanimous feeling. It is more supported with wisdom.
Tadanga Nibbuti is the highest state.
We can say so, because one has to achieve Tadanga Nibbuti in order to go through, expand, come into the full Nibbuti, or what we call as the Achanta Nibbuti, the complete liberation. So you can't achieve complete liberation in one shot. Rather, one may go through the insight practice and experience a very temporary freedom. So that temporary freedom has to be built up, further developed, further expand, further maintain, again and again revisit, develop. So likewise, one has to very much achieve ultimately the complete freedom.
So it is better to try to be in that temporary liberation state rather than the upeksha.
Actually, the temporary liberation itself may have the quality of upeksha. You know, now when Buddha mentioned about the enlightenment factors, suppose that you are going through some vipassana process and your mind get sort of detached from everything.
Yes.
Now, when mind is fully detached, now you have nothing to do because thing have done. No, there is no grasping, there is no clinging. So now you just have to be, just be. Mind has let go of everything and you just have to be. So at that time, since you are maintaining kind of a just be approach, just wait, do nothing. So that is where the equanimity come into the picture. That is where the upekkha sambojjhanga come into the big picture, because everything is happening smoothly, mind hasn't involved with anything, mind hasn't clung to anything, so you have nothing to do basically. It's a keep it that way. So when you do that, Buddha mentioned, okay, and that is how the equanimity sambojjhanga, the upekkha sambojjhanga being developed. And it has the feeling of equanimity as well. Because it may not be really pleasurable, it may not be painful, it may be a kind of a equanimous kind of feeling.
Yes.
But you are not attached to anything at all. Mind is not observing any kind of a equanimous feeling as we did before. Rather, mind has its own kind of a freedom. It mind its own business. Nothing, not involved with anything. But in terms of the feeling torn, it could be a little bit of equanimity. We can say it may not be so much of pleasure, and it may not be so much of pain, rather in between.
Okay. So then, the Tadanga Nibbuti is slightly above.
That's what I feel. No, that's the thing. Tadanga Nibbuti typically mention that, say, you are experiencing a temporary freedom based on your vipassana practice, and you are simply experiencing that. So when you are experiencing that, you can't say, sometimes it could be a kind of a pleasurable, kind of a pleasant experience. At that time, one can interpret, okay, it has some sort of a pleasant feeling. And on the other hand, one can say, okay, you are experiencing some kind of a boredom, So it may be a kind of a equanimous feeling. But the interesting point is that your mind is not attached to it.
Yes.
So, I mean, feelings are there, but the mind is not attached. Now, just to give a simple example, now suppose you are walking. Now, while you are walking, in our previous stages, in our early practices, we are constantly asked to keep our attention on the touching sensation. So, otherwise our mind gets distracted. So, in order to avoid distractions, so we constantly keep our attention on these sensations. So, sensations fairly could be equanimous. The feeling-wise, they could be equanimous. Now, this is our early practice. But later, suppose someone has developed fair amount of wisdom, fair amount of insight. Now, his mind is not attached to anything. He may be walking, but mind is not established on walking. Mind is not involved in any kind of a sensation. So, the whole experience may overall could have a kind of a equanimous feeling. But mind is not involved there. Mind is not observing that. Mind is not observing any kind of a sensation. Rather, mind is not established anywhere. So that is, we can say, kind of a tadanga nibbuti.
Thank you, Vante.
Yeah.
Thanks for the very good explanation. I understood. Thank you. Tirvan Sarnai.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Don for the next question.
Thank you, Vante. I like to share one of the experience of my meditation and day-to-day meditation practice, Bhante.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But then normally I do like walking and Pariyanka Bhavana meditation. It's just that, I just want just to share one experience that happened yesterday. So normally, Bhante, in my day-to-day also, I try to do the mental note of most of the things happen. Not always, but most of the time if I have some desire or some anger comes into my mind, I just take note of it, and then sometimes I kind of win it, and in the sense, I overcome that.
Right.
But with regard to some example happened yesterday, of course with my family member, I had a bit of aversion and anger kind of came up. So, you know, there was a bit of I talk in angry mode and angry tone.
Mm-hmm.
And so of course when I now look at it back, it's simply nothing. I mean,
yeah.
And especially like in my morning meditation today, I can see especially in my head there's so much of sensations compared to my normal meditation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I still intend to do the practice, and I know that is the path for me to eventually handle this thing long term.
Right.
But what I noticed is, Bhante, that in that situation, you know, I did not even think of this mental note. It did not come to my mind at all.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose probably that would have been the best way for me to handle if I could have noted that and stop it.
Yeah.
But my intention is Bhante, well, I continue, I hope one day I probably will be able to do that. Do you think if there's any other technique I could?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when we are fully involved in a particular incident, actually we get trapped in it. So we can't establish mindfulness and step back and watch it objectively. Rather, we subjectively participate and we are thinking, okay, he's wrong. So likewise, I am now putting so much of eye-making, mind-making, all these individuation and all these things are there. So it's very difficult to come out of it and look at it objectively. Come out of it and look at it mindfully. But later, as you mentioned, once it is fade away, somehow we have handled it. Now later, if we stop and look at it, then we understand, okay, I mean, I was trapped in it, I was entangled in it, I got caught in it. Now,
it happened
very quickly. So, I mean, it is very much like we have to always on guard in that sense. So, sometimes we keep things very relaxed and ultimately sometimes certain incident penetrate and we get consumed. We get participated, we get constructed, and now I am angry. So, that is because I couldn't maintain kind of this kind of a separation or this kind of observation, but that incident has penetrated fully inside and it has overwhelmed myself. I mean, these are very interesting experiences because, sometimes we can handle certain minor situations properly, but there could be some certain extreme situations sometimes still they penetrate and they intervene, they sort of interfere our calmness, so we lose our mindfulness. So that we need to admit, okay, still I am not fully developed, still there is a potential. Now the interesting point is, still we have the potential to get angry. Now you see, I mean, when there are no any kind of an incident, we appear like saints, we appear like non-returners. But when an incident happens, then only we understand, okay, still I am getting angry, still I have anger. So the potential to get angry is still available. So that is why these things have to happen again and again. Because others always have to do these kinds of mistakes. So we may understand, okay, still I get angry. Still my mind has the potential to get angry. So this is a very, very honest revelation actually. It's a very honest reflection, understanding that we honestly, very humbly understand, even though I am a good practitioner, even though most of the time I can maintain a mind free from anger, still the potential to get anger is available. In an extreme situation, still I get angry. So that's a very honest, humble acceptance that I am not fully free from anger yet. Still some work to do. Still I have to slowly look at anger, understand anger, without allowing anger to overwhelm the mind, slowly allow it to fade away, quickly allow it to fade away. So likewise, I have to sort of do further practice. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that is where, I mean, we have, as the practitioners, we have to be always on the ground rather than thinking, okay, I am now free from anger, there can't be any anger in my mind, for several days I didn't get any anger. So that's a kind of an overestimation. Rather we can always think, okay, I am doing well right now, but still I can't give any certificate, I can't give any assurance. There could still be a possibility to get anger. So that makes us more humble, more down to earth, and always geared towards further practice, further refinement of our understanding, and even to understand very subtle defilements. So that gives us a lot of encouragement to further development. That would be, I think, much better than thinking that I am a saint, I am a non-returner or something like that.
Yes,
yeah.
That was a big realization for me yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, there was a confidence growing in me. But yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. I believe that's the last
question. Okay, then thank you very much for all of your active participation. And today also we have discussed fair amount of Dhamma and try to connect it with our own practice. And with that, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. ආකාසට්ඨාජ බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාජ බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාජ බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු